From NPR News, this is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. The January death of 14-year-old Martin Lee Anderson in a Florida boot camp has raised serious questions about the rehabilitation of juvenile offenders. Some states like Missouri and Maryland are revamping their juvenile justice systems, but many people are concerned that the growing number of youth entering the system are not being effectively dealt with and may find themselves in as much danger as they did out on the streets. We're joined in our Washington, D.C. studios by Malik Russell, Communications Director for the Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit Justice Policy Institute. Also with us, Dr. Raymond Crowell, Vice President for Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services at the National Mental Health Association. He formerly served as Director of Child and Adolescent Services for Baltimore's Mental Health System. I welcome you both, gentlemen. Mr. Crowell, let me start with you. Many people are familiar with, in fact, this case. It has made the news, so many talked about, and we should note that the death of this young man is still being investigated. We don't know if, in fact, it came at the deaths or at the hands of the sheriff's department. But one has to question whether or not we are seeing a growing number of abuses in the juvenile justice system today.
Well, hello to you, first of all. My immediate response to that is that I don't know that we're discovering a growing number of abuses or whether or not we're becoming more aware of the kinds of practices that are going on in boot camps. Boot camps operate on a punishment model, and compliance is their goal. And in order to gain compliance, boot camp staff will oftentimes decide that it's necessary to get verbally and physically rough with a child. And that, unfortunately, as we've seen in Florida, can oftentimes lead to negative outcomes, hurt children, broken limbs, and unfortunately, in some cases, death.
What we are seeing, though, Mr. Russell, across the board, are states who are rethinking their juvenile justice practices in terms of perhaps not handing out a slap to youth, but a hug.
Definitely, Ed. And most people point to Missouri as the place or the model that other states should ascribe to. Missouri in 1983 eliminated their youth prisons. They replaced them with small campus-like settings and got rid of the prison guards and replaced them with counselors and teachers. And the results have been amazing. The recidivism rates in Missouri are way below the national average and way below most states, as well as the fact that there has been no type of incident, no violent injury or incident that has occurred or death that has occurred in the Missouri system since they made this transformation. So people are pointing to them as a model of where states should go. Others are also embarking on the same path. If you look at the Annie E. Casey Foundation, Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiative, they're operating in several different states and jurisdictions as well. And it's all based on the belief that most young people are capable of being rehabilitated. The overwhelming majority of people, young people that are incarcerated in this country, are nonviolent offenders. So 2/3 of the people incarcerated are nonviolent offenders. Yet you have people being placed in boot camps as kind of a punitive measure when most of these kids are just kids that have kind of gone off the wrong track and can't be pulled back on.
We should note, too, that in Missouri and some of these other states, they see the importance of changing the environment. The boot camp that we talk about and that comes to mind immediately is kind of the gated barbed wire boot camps. But now we're seeing a movement toward campuses and school-like environments.
That's definitely true. And what we're seeing with juvenile advocates all around the country, the MacArthur Foundation, the Models for Change Initiative, which is operating in Pennsylvania, Illinois, Washington, and now has moved into Louisiana. And they're operating on the principle that most kids can be rehabilitated, that there are developmental differences between youth and adults. That and this was highlighted in last year in the Supreme Court in the Roper v. Simmons case. So people are recognizing that there is room for young people to be rehabilitated. They can't be rehabilitated, though, in an environment that resembles in a junior prison.
Raymond Crowell, we should note that it's important to understand that young people process information differently, and we may not and should not perhaps handle them in the same way that we would handle an adult, quote, criminal.
That's right. The research has given us a much greater understanding of adolescent development. And we know that adolescent brain, the brain, human brain, now develops much more slowly than we thought. And fully, the sections that of the brain that govern impulse control, judgment, reasoned and thoughtful responses don't develop until the early to mid-20s. So that adolescents, then, you can expect will be more emotional, more impulsive, and much more willing to take risks and experiment than their adult counterparts. I may skate. They look at skateboarding down a stair rail very differently than I will look at it, and then assess the risk benefit much more differently than we do.
Malik Russell, talk to me about why we should care, particularly those who do not have children, about this phenomenon. Again, when we look at the death of Martin Lee Anderson, seemingly, and I say seemingly because we don't know the details of the camp situation and incident, at the hands of sheriffs who were on videotape beating this young boy. If this is not atypical, why should we care outside of the human interest side of caring?
We should be concerned, Ed, for several reasons, one of which is the fact that this incarceration in itself disproportionately impacts the African-American community way beyond our numbers in the general population. And it's the same in juvenile justice. African-American youth are way more likely to be locked up than their counterpart white youths for the same offenses with the same type of criminal record. So we should be concerned because of the fact that these young people, just like each year 600,000 former inmates return to society, each year a bunch of young people are returning back to their communities. How are they returning? Are they going to return as individuals that are able to contribute and that are rehabilitated, that have a purpose in life? Or are they going to come back as greater or as better trained criminals? And that's something that we have to be concerned about. And just simply the fact that, you know, when we look at it, most people look at the fact that, you know, all these kids are locked up and they're concerned about the fact that, that, you know, they're overly violent. But the majority of young people that are locked up are not violent. They can be rehabilitated. And the data is available now to prove that.
Doctor, let me ask you, Raymond Kroll, when you think about rehabilitation, allowing these kids that opportunity and then setting them back out in the streets, isn't part of the problem from the beginning, the idea of even before hitting boot camp, that they just don't have the kind of environment, the kind of stable environment needed by young people?
Well, they absolutely come into the environment, into boot camps or detention with histories of abuse, neglect, and less than supportive environments, and a lack of oft-time supporting, nurturing adults. And so, in thinking about returning them, we have to think about not just about their delinquency behavior, but about the supports that they're going to need once they're back in the community to succeed. Absolutely.
How realistic is it to assume that in sheer numbers we're going to be able to see that kind of thing?
I think it's realistic. I think that it's totally realistic. It's totally doable. We have skills and knowledge and technology to be able to deal with children absolutely before they go in fact, before they encounter the juvenile justice system, but certainly on the backside of that, with our systems and with family and community engagement, and with some of the models that are out there, that we certainly can help, can impact them and keep them out.
Malik Russell, isn't part of the problem, and how do we correct this, that the least among us often don't receive the attention needed? And we talk about the least among us in this country, whether we want to admit it or not. We're talking about teenagers, young people.
Yes, that's true, Ed. And what we look at is the amount of money being spent on incarcerating young people and adults as well. Now, if that money was invested on the front end, you know, what type of results would it produce? And that's what we have to begin looking at when we're looking at, instead of incarcerating kids, placing them in rehabilitative environments, there's a savings of money. That money can be reinvested in community-based alternatives. And really, it comes down to just presenting opportunities for young people, making sure that young people have a right and access to education, health care, and just some opportunities in life. And that is very important if we want to have a actual deterrent to, say, the criminal lifestyle.
Raymond, let me ask you this. How do we convince people that now is the time? Quite frankly, I've been hearing this kind of thing for decades, not necessarily about the boot camp, but intervention into young people's lives. And again, truth be told, I hate to sound so pessimistic today, but I think we have to be realistic. Things seem to be continuing to go south.
Well, I think that people have to understand that young people's development is very much a function of their environment, and that if we change the environment and do the work now, they have to get this message consistently, I think, that if we change the environment up front, we'll decrease the number of kids that are going into the system, and if we provide them support and alternatives after being in a system, in the detention system or in the juvenile justice system, that they can become productive members of society.
Malik Russell, before we let you go, let me ask you, your nonprofit, Justice Policy Institute, how do you think that you and your group are received by those who certainly you reach out to for help? Are they seeing and starting to understand the gravity of this problem?
I think so. And Ed, as you pointed out, you know, the assumption is that crime among juveniles is increasing. But if you really look at the numbers after reaching a peak in 1995, crime for juveniles has really been going down nationally. But the perception among the public is that, you know, crime is up because we're getting more media coverage of certain sensational crimes. And so we try to counter that, and we try to counter a lot of the myths. And it takes a while, because a lot of times it's hard for people to swallow the fact that, you know, some of the widely held perceptions that they have are not correct. But we are working in terms of changing that. And I think people are now beginning to accept the fact that there is another way of treating young people. There's another way of treating societal problems, as opposed to using incarceration as the main method.
Yeah, it's important to note that we need to really look at youth as our future, as opposed to just a catchphrase, and make sure that we take care of that. Malik Russell is a communications director for the Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit Justice Policy Institute, and Dr. Raymond Kroll is vice president for mental health and substance abuse services at the National Mental Health Association. I thank you both for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ed.